When Pike Reed stepped through the doors of the gentleman's retreat, he almost collided with a drunken reveler, both his arms around a giggling girl, one of them holding a fizzing bottle of champagne. But before the laughing, singing towhead lurched away, Reed thought he recognized him. He looked like young Steve McCord. A moment later, he dismissed the thought from his mind. Trace McCord would never allow his son to visit a cat house. And besides, the word around town was that Steve mooned around writing sappy poems and his inclinations did not run toward ladies. Reed's attention was distracted by the large and imposing figure of Madame Josette, who stepped toward him in some kind of flowing, flapping robe that made her look a frigate under full sail.
Monsieur Reed, quel plaisir de vous revoir.
Reed had time to respond before Josette's massive arms enfolded him and hugged him to her huge breasts.
Huh?
A moment later, 6 inches taller and 200 pounds heavier than the scrawny, gasping deputy, she held him at arm's length and smiled.
I said, how nice to see you again.
Yeah, you too, Josette. Here, did I catch sight of young Steve McCord when I came in?
The woman put a finger to her lips.
Some gentlemen wish to remain anonymous at Josette's place.
She hugged Reed again, not as close this time.
I've been keeping a sweet girl just for you. She's come all the way from France by way of Tangier.
Josette's hands fluttered like released white doves.
Her name is Loulou Lemaire, and she's as pure as, how you say, milk in a bucket.
Josette, I'm here on business.
The woman scowled and shoved the deputy away from her.
Then why are you wasting my time?
I'm here on Lucien Tweddle's business.
Josette blinked.
Oh, mon Dieu. The fat man is not threatening to foreclose on me again.
No, not this time.
And what is your business?
I'm looking for Hank Stanek on Mr. Tweddle's account.
He's not here.
Then where is he?
Je ne sais pas.
What does that mean?
It means I don't know.
Mr. Tweddle won't be happy.
Come with me.
She led Reed to a large, comfortable room furnished with overstuffed chairs, sofas, and small tables. A bar had been set up opposite the door where a small, neat man with pomaded hair and scarlet arm garters stood polishing a glass. The young puncher Reed had seen earlier sprawled on a velvet sofa, nuzzling his girls. He laughed too loudly and seemed half drunk. Before the deputy could take a good look, Josette propelled him to the bar.
Drink?
Whiskey.
The tidy bartender filled a shot glass and placed it in front of Reed.
Charlie, this fellow is looking for Hank Stanek.
Charlie hesitated and the woman rolled her eyes.
Lucien Tweddle.
The young man on the sofa leaned forward, suddenly alert, but nobody noticed. The bartender nodded, his face empty.
A couple of months ago, Stanek was managing a stage stop for the Butterfield Overland Mail up by Bandy Creek. He's living there with an Osage woman and has 3-4 kids by her.
Reed drained his glass, then grinned.
A stage robber working for Butterfield. That's rich.
Maybe you got religion. $1 for the drink.
It's all right, Charlie. C'est offert par la maison.
Whatever you say, ma'am.
Hey! Did I hear somebody mention Lucien Tweddle?
The youth had gotten off the couch and now stood, legs apart, in the middle of the floor. Pike Reed didn't like what he saw. The kid was a poser. His hand hovered close to his holstered Colt, and his expression was both arrogant and belligerent. The kid seemed to be on the prod, anxious to add to his score, if he had one. Josette drained the tension out of the air.
All of us here are friends of Mr. Tweddle.
How about him, Josette?
McCord nodded at Reed, besides himself, the only man present who carried a gun.
I'm a friend of Mr. Tweddle.
I asked the lady.
Reed twigged it then. Urged on by alcohol, the kid was hunting trouble and he wanted it real bad.
Deputy Reed and Monsieur Tweddle are very good friends.
That gave the young man pause. The last thing he wanted right now was to upset the banker.
That's just as well for you, mister.
Reed fought when he had to and killed only when the money was right. He'd gunned 5 white men and had nothing to prove.
No hard feelings, huh, kid?
Don't call me kid.
Then it's Steve. That set all right with you?
How do you know my name?
Reed knew he was about to score a hit.
Everybody knows your name, Mr. McCord.
That did it. Steve smiled.
Buy you a drink,
Pike. That's my handle as ever was. But I'll have to refuse the drink.
He watched a scowl about to be reborn on the young man's face.
Mr. Tweddle wants me to bring in Hank Stanek.
The outlaw? Ran with John Wesley Harden for a spell?
That's him. Though I've just been told he's gone straight.
The young man's eyes flicked to the bartender, then back to Reed.
He's a gun?
One of the young women pulled on Steve's arm.
Come back to the sofa, honey.
He pushed her roughly away.
How does he stack up?
Reed smiled inwardly. It was obvious that McCord was eager to measure himself against a gunman of reputation who once rode with Wes Harden. That was a thing Mr. Tweedle should know.
He's good.
How good?
I'd say at least a dozen men are pushing up daisies who found out the hard way just how good Hank Stanek is with a gun.
I want to meet him. I'll ride with you.
Sure thing. But ain't your pa expecting you back at the ranch?
My father can go to hell.
Pike Reed was surprised at the bitter hate the kid conveyed in just 5 words.
Well, all right then, Mr. McCord. Let's be going.
The barn was destroyed, the infernal machine burned beyond saving, and Sam Flintlock felt gloom.
Don't worry, Sam. I'll explain all this to Mr. Constable.
Flintlock gave him a look that would have withered a sunflower at 10 paces, and McPhee decided to keep his mouth shut. The young man picked up a piece of charred wood, studied it closely, and threw it back onto the pile.
Why did you start the damn thing when you knew you couldn't stop it?
Figured I'd learn by doing. A lot of men do that. Learn by doing.
I should have shot you right out of that cabin, you know.
Why didn't you?
My aim was off.
Rider coming in, Sam.
Flintlock followed the younger man's eyes. O'Hara came through the blue twilight at a walk. Like all Pawnee, he rode with a poker-backed posture that gave him the look of a Prussian Uhlan. But every now and then, he leaned from the saddle and swatted the heads off wildflowers with the stick he carried. Flintlock adjusted the angle of the Colt in his waistband, then he and McPhee walked as far as the cabin. O'Hara drew rein a few moments later. Without a word, he held the stick upright, then tossed it to Flintlock.
This is Frank Constable's cane.
The breed nodded.
Where is he?
Nowhere. He is dead.
How did it happen?
And why?
O'Hara lifted his head and stared at the pink sky. A few purple clouds drifted westward, as stately as adrift galleons.
I'm a man who is partial to coffee. A visiting man should always be offered coffee. It's considered polite, even among the Pawnee.
Light and set and come inside, O'Hara.
Flintlock stared at the cane silver dragon, then at the breed.
Tell me this wasn't you.
I don't kill old white men. Only young ones.
O'Hara poised his cup halfway to his mouth.
Why did you burn Barn?
It was an accident.
You know, I saw Barnabas after Frank Constable was killed. He sat at the top of the church spire and wore a black pointed hat.
Flintlock said nothing. McPhee bit his lip with anxiety.
Barnabas said he got the hat from a witch woman.
What did he say?
He said he planned to cast a spell to make his grandson less of an idiot.
O'Hara shrugged.
Flintlock, I don't know if he told me that before or after you burned down the barn.
Forget the damn barn. What happened to Frank Constable?
He was shot twice in the back as he left the shack of the whore Nancy Pocket.
Oh my God. First Mr. Wraith and now Mr. Constable. Sam, what does it mean?
Constable was too old for whores.
Who decided that? You or him?
Who did it?
I don't know. No one knows.
What about Nancy Pocket? What did she say?
Marshal Lithgow says that as Constable stepped out the door of her shack, she heard two shots. The old lawyer fell back inside and died on the floor.
Flintlock thought for a while.
Cliff Wraith was getting too close to something and he had to be got rid of. And the same goes with Constable.
Sam studied the dragon-topped cane.
I wish this thing could talk.
Mr. Wraith talked to you, Sam. He said a big man was guilty of Polly Mallory's murder.
And Frank Constable discovered who the big man is?
Seems likely. I have no other answer.
McPhee bent his head and stared into the inky depths of his coffee cup.
Sam, now with both Mr. Wraith and Mr. Constable gone, you have no call to guard me any longer.
Don't even think like that. I took on the job and I'll see it through.
We're dealing with a man who has a lot more power than we have. I don't think I want to prolong the agony.
What does that mean?
I think I should ride out of the territory and never come back.
That was Constable's plan in the first place, remember?
I know, but I was too bullheaded to see his logic.
Hell, all you wanted to do was clear your name. I can't fault a man for that.
I'll ride out today.
We'll need to find your horse first. It's probably halfway back to open sky by this time.
I'll search for your horse, McPhee.
Thank you kindly.
Except you're not going anywhere on it, McPhee.
Both O'Hara and McPhee stared at him in surprise.
When Cliff Wraith was murdered, this became personal. When Cliff Wraith was murdered, this became personal. I aim to find the man who did it and kill him.
How will you do that? The men who could have told you are both dead.
I don't know. Not yet, I don't.
Flintlock poured coffee into his cup with a rock-steady hand.
I'm still not angry enough to raise 100 different kinds of hell. But by God, I'm working on it.
It's strictly a business proposition, Hank.
What does Tweddle want?
He wouldn't tell me.
A Tweddle business proposition usually means a killing.
I don't know.
It must be something else. Mr. Tweddle knows I can do his killing for him.
You're Trace McCord's son, huh?
I was. I've disowned him.
Yeah. Or he disowned you.
Steve tensed. It was a deliberate move, aimed at getting the point across that he was a revolver fighter and a man to be reckoned with. But Stanek, a man who'd seen the kids like many times, ignored him.
I got a wife and youngins, Reed. Look around, you'll see how it is with me. We ain't exactly living high on the hog here.
Stanek's three black-haired children clung to the skirts of their Osage mother, wary of strangers. The woman was tall and stately, and when she looked at Reed, her eyes burned with resentment. The cabin was untidy and somewhat dirty, more akin to a poor white laborer's abode than the home of a famous outlaw. Stanek was a bull-necked, bearded brute of a man, his head shaven but for a scalp lock at the crown, no doubt his wife's influence. But his brown eyes revealed a quick intelligence, and the creases at the corners a willingness to smile.
Big money, Hank. Just one quick job.
Sounds like a go to me.
Stanek ignored that and glanced at his wife.
We need the money, me say.
I need my husband, and my children need their father.
One quick job.
Maybe one job too many.
Oh, don't listen to the Indian, Hank.
Mise is my wife.
Reed read the warning sign.
The kid's just joshing, Hank. At least come back with me and talk with Mr. Tweddle.
McCord wouldn't let it go.
I don't josh. I don't like Indians.
Steve, shut your damn trap. You got nothing to prove in a man's home.
Kid, you're on the prod. Best you calm down a little. No one will hurt you while you're under my roof.
McCord didn't want to back up in front of Reed and Stanek's woman. But then, from under the table, he heard a triple click and something hard push into his groin.
What do you say, huh?
Reed's smile was sick and forced.
You always were such a joker, Hank.
Steve McCord felt the gun muzzle push harder.
What do you say?
Steve knew if he talked sass to Stanek, the man would, without a moment's hesitation, blow his balls off.
I say, I'm just excited about meeting you, Hank, is all.
See? We're all perfect friends here.
The pressure left Steve's groin, and Stanek placed his revolver on the table. It was a scarred blue Colt with a worn rubber handle, a working gun. The outlaw rose to his feet, then shoved the Colt into the pocket of his frayed canvas coat.
I'll talk with Tweddle.
Stanek walked to the cabin door and opened it.
Well, let's get going.
After Sam Flintlock had carefully locked the door of Frank Constable's cabin and mounted his horse, he took a last look around at the devastation he and Jamie McPhee had wrought. He turned to his companions.
Let's go.
Sam, I don't think this is such a good idea.
It ain't. We're riding into the lion's den.
Why?
Because it sure as hell beats hanging out here, twiddling our thumbs and burning stuff.
Whoever killed the Pinkerton and Frank Constable will come after you, Flintlock. You're the last link to McPhee.
I'm counting on that. My being in open sky will bring the killer out into the open.
You like to live dangerously, Flintlock.
And you, O'Hara. Whose side are you on, huh?
My own.
A man can't say fairer than that, I guess.
Flintlock noticed a slight change in the gait of his buckskin.
Ah, damn. He's cast a shoe.
There's a blacksmith close by, or you can wait until you reach town.
I better do it now. When I get to open sky, I might need the horse in a hurry.
He threw a puzzled look at O'Hara.
What's a blacksmith doing out in this wilderness?
He's set up at a settlement to the west of Buzzard Gap. If you can call a general store that doubles as a saloon and a pole corral a settlement.
What do they call it?
They don't call it anything.
Well, I call it right handy.
Flintlock left his horse with the blacksmith and met McPhee in front of the saloon in the nameless settlement near Buzzard Gap.
Where's O'Hara?
He rode off, Sam. Didn't say where.
Well, let's see if that saloon has any coffee or grub. Come on, McPhee.
Three horses stood in the corral next to the two-story building, and above the door a weathered wooden sign proclaimed, "Finest Wines and Spirits." The proprietor, a gray-haired man, stepped from behind the store part of the building, wiping off his hands on a white apron.
What can I do for you, gents?
Coffee.
Pots on top of the stove over there. Cups on the hooks.
Grub?
Beans in the pot beside the coffee. Plates on the shelf.
We'll stick to coffee.
Suit yourself. Cost you 2 bits.
Expensive.
It's a going rate.
Ain't too many real sociable folks around here, huh?
If you lived here, mister, would you be sociable?
The gray-haired man stepped away and went back behind the store counter. Flintlock and McPhee poured coffee, and McPhee turned to Flintlock.
Watch out for that, Sam.
He nodded to a black puddle on the floor that had leaked from a molasses barrel.
Sticky, that.
Hey, you. Mountain man.
Flintlock earlier noticed the two young men who sat at a table eating crackers and blue-veined cheese. A bottle of whiskey stood between them. Obviously, they were hunting trouble.
What can I do for you boys?
Flintlock stood with his back to the rough timber bar and carefully placed the unloaded Hawken upright beside him.
You too good to eat beans?
The man who spoke had insolent blue eyes and a week's growth of beard. Flintlock thought he looked a little like Billy Bonney, but without Billy's dazzling smile and significant presence.
I don't see you eating them.
That's sass, Ben. I'd sure call that sass.
I know it is, Lou. Question is, what am I gonna do about it?
Nothing. You're not gonna do anything about it because I don't need any more trouble than I already have.
I reckon Ben will decide that.
Let the man drink his coffee in peace, boys.
You shut your trap, Slayton.
Flintlock drained his cup.
Good coffee. I reckon I'll see if the smith has started on my horse yet.
Hey, you don't think you're just walking out of here after the way you backtalked Ben?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. Walk on out of here.
Sam.
I see him.
Lou is on his feet smiling, his hand close to the Colt on his hip.
Boy, are you really so anxious to get another notch on the handle of that hog leg?
Flintlock glanced at the revolver.
Seems to me you already got enough.
Lou grinned.
Enough is never enough.
Cutting a notch on your gun for every man you kill is a tin horn trick and low down. How many do you have?
6, and pretty soon 7.
Hell, You sure I can't talk you out of this? I mean, it just ain't civilized.
Nope. I'm primed up to kill me a big old mountain man.
You tell him, Lou.
You want to do the honors, Ben?
Lou's eyes never left Flintlock.
Nah, you can take him. I'll watch.
Then, Flintlock got good and angry, and, as was his habit, moved quickly from mad to damn mad.
You low-down scum, picking on a peaceful man who's just drinking his coffee.
His hands hung by his sides.
All right. Shuck your iron, boy. Open the ball.
For a moment, a glimmer of doubt showed in Lou's eyes. Flintlock looked too confident, like he'd been there before, but he drew. In a life full of mistakes and wrong choices, pulling his Colt was Lou's worst. He realized that a half second before Flintlock's bullet crashed into his chest, splintered breastbone, and tore through his heart. Flintlock took a step to his left and swung his gun on Ben. For a moment, he thought he'd be too late on the shoot, but he was wrong.
No! For God's sakes, no!
Ben tossed his gun away from him, and it clattered into a corner.
Damn you! Pick up the iron, you piece of filth, and get to your work!
Sam, no! It's over! He's out of it!
Like a man fallen from a great height, it took Flintlock a while before he hit the flat. He shoved his Colt back into his waistband.
Yeah, it's over. Almost.
Slayton looked up from where he kneeled beside Lou.
He's dead.
Flintlock nodded.
Slayton, that there spilled molasses is a mess. Sticky, you know what I mean?
I'll mop it up. Right now, I got other things on my mind, mister.
It shouldn't go to waste. Molasses is expensive.
He stared hard at Ben. The man read Flintlock's eyes.
I ain't gonna mop it up.
Yeah, that's right, you're not. You're gonna lick it up like the mangy dog you are.
The hell I will!
Flintlock pulled his gun.
Get on your hands and knees, make like a cur and lick it up, or I'll drop you right where you stand.
Here, that won't do.
It does for me.
Ben's eyes darted to the corner where he'd tossed his gun. Too far. He'd never make it.
Lick it up.
Go to hell!
Flintlock fired.
Ah! Ah!
At a distance of just 12 feet, his aim was true. The big .45 bullet hit the base of Ben's right thumb and left him with a bloody stump. The man held up his hand and stared at the horror that had just befallen him.
You picked on a poor mountain man for no other reason you thought he would be easy to kill. It seems you were wrong.
Ah! You shot up my thumb, you son of a bitch!
That I am. McPhee, pick up his gun and keep it. He's got no further need, huh? He's got no further need for it.
He nodded in the direction of the dead man.
Slayton, I'm sure he's got money and enough in his pocket to bury him. Maybe Ben will help you dig the hole.
Who the hell are you, mister?
Name's Sam Flintlock.
You're a hard, unforgiving man, Mr. Flintlock.
I won't be bullied or railroaded. They should have known that and extended me some common courtesy.
He glared at Ben.
Never pick on a stranger who carries a gun, boy. Often as not, you're gonna let loose 100 different kinds of hell.
Well, I guess he knows that now.
Cost him a thumb. But the lesson was worth the price. Let's get my horse, McPhee.
A man wearing a plug hat stuck his head inside and summed up what had happened in a single glance. His face gray, he vanished again. Ben glared and grimaced and held up his right arm with his left.
Damn you! You crippled me!
You right-handed, boy?
The hell with you! What do you think?
Oh, well, too bad. Get that mitt bandaged and practice with your left, and in a few years, you'll be just fine.
Flintlock turned and walked to the door, McPhee ahead of him. McPhee opened the door and stepped into a bullet.
Oh!
War, Mr. Stanek. That's the name of the game.
Lucian Tweddle reclined in an easy chair, a brandy snifter in one chubby hand, a cigar in the other.
And you want me to start it?
Yes. The death toll doesn't need to be too high. A few here, a few there, that's all.
Masked?
No, Brendan O'Rourke or one of his hands must see and later identify young Mr. McCord here.
What about the old man himself? Does he get a bullet?
Not yet. He must live to retaliate.
Stanek nodded in a tall man's direction.
What about him?
Mr. Hunt won't join the raid. I want him here with me. The same thing goes for Deputy Reed.
You object to that, Hank?
No objections, Bo. Ain't your style to ride with ruffians, is it?
Hunt smiled.
I don't mind.
His eyes flicked to Holloway and Trent.
If they take a bath once in a while.
Holloway glared and fingered the head of his axe. Slick Trent grinned.
Nancy, fill the gentleman's glasses and pass around the cigars. We must take care of our guests.
The woman's yellow silk gown rustled as she passed him, and Trent's hot eyes followed her every movement.
Poor Miss Pocket recently had a most unsettling experience. A man was shot and killed on her very doorstep. I've taken her into my home and under my wing until she's quite recovered from the shock.
Handy, ain't it?
Mr. Stanek, all I'm asking you to do is ride in, shoot up the place, then ride out.
Tweddle smiled and squeezed his cigar.
Now, if in the confusion, dear Mrs. O'Rourke was mortally wounded by a stray shot, that would be a most fortunate happenstance.
That's easy. Hell, I'll put a bullet in the fat old cow.
Very commendable of you, Mr. McCord.
Tweddle looked across the parlor at Stanek.
Well, will you take on the job, Mr. Stanek?
If the money is right.
You'll be on retainer initially. $5,000 now, a further $5,000 when the task is completed. In addition, $600 a kill, if such kill is in the line of duty.
How many on the raid?
You and your two colleagues, and our young Mr. McCord.
Thin numbers.
O'Rourke's men are a bunch of stove-up old punchers who probably never fired a revolver in anger in their lives. You'll have no trouble.
Sounds easy. I don't like riding into situations that sound easy. But I'll take on the job, Mr. Tweddle.
Excellent. Excellent, Mr. Stanek. Now the success of this venture is assured.
When?
Stay in open sky tonight and enjoy the whiskey and whores. Nancy will point you in the right direction for both.
I'm married and I don't drink, but I feel like bucking the tiger.
There you go, Mr. Stanek. Each to his own, I always say. Then relax this evening. The raid will take place tomorrow night at an hour of your choosing.
Stanek got to his feet.
Come to the bank tomorrow morning, and I'll pay you the first part of the retainer. Now, gentlemen, I bid you good night. I grow weary from the business of the day.
Tweddle waved a hand.
You stay, Mr. Hunt. I need a quick word.
After Stanek and the others filed out, Tweddle turned to his remaining guest.
Mr. Hunt, I have no intention of paying Stanek all that money. You may have to get rid of him.
That's what you pay me for.
You don't seem shocked.
Stanek is in a hard business. He knows the risks.
Jamie McPhee and that flintlock person are still thorns in my side. I want them out of the way.
I'll see what I can do.
The Pinkerton who was on McPhee's side and the lawyer who hired him are both dead. The latter thanks to pretty Nancy here. Isn't that so, my dear?
He gave me no choice.
No, none at all. You did us all a service.
Lucian, was Frank Constable right?
About what?
Did you murder Polly Mallory because she was pregnant with your child?
No, dear girl, I didn't. I murdered Polly Mallory because she was pregnant with someone else's child.
Bo Hunt and Nancy exchanged a glance that Tweddle intercepted.
What will you do? Turn me over to the law?
I killed a man to save you from the rope, Lucian. I won't turn you in and play traitor.
And I won't forget it. And you, Mr. Hunt, what about you? Under all that fine linen, are you a Judas at heart?
I'm loyal to the man who pays my wages. I don't examine my conscience any closer than that.
A gentleman's answer, and the one I expected.
Tweddle smiled broadly.
My, my, aren't we a fine trio of rogues?
Jamie McPhee stumbled backward and Sam Flintlock eased him to the floor. Then, gun in hand, charged into the street. A rifleman and a plug stood behind an abandoned fruit and vegetable stand that stood tipped over on one wheel opposite the saloon. The man threw a Winchester to his shoulder and fired at Flintlock. He hurried the shot and Flintlock heard the round split the air close to his right ear. Flintlock fired and his bullet hit the wood frame of the stand with a venomous smack. It was close enough that Plug Hat broke and ran. Flintlock went after him. The man ran for about 20 yards, then stopped and turned. He shouldered the rifle and fired, levered another round into the chamber and fired again. The first bullet tugged at the sleeve of Flintlock's shirt, and the second zinged through his hat and came mighty close to braining him.
Damn you! Stand your ground and fight like a man!
The man in the Plug Hat, a little fellow with yellow hair and heavy eyebrows, cranked the Winchester again. Flintlock took his time. Now was the moment for a grandstand play. He two-handed the Colt to eye level, sighted carefully, and fired. He and the rifleman shot at the same time.
Oh!
This time, Flintlock took a hit, a sledgehammer blow to his right thigh. But his bullet scored. The man in the Plug Hat shrieked and fell, blood all over his shattered mouth. Stunned by the impact of the bullet that hit him, Flintlock watched the downed man writhe for a while, the heels of his boots gouging dirt, then lie still. Flintlock removed his hat, stared at the sky for a moment, then wiped sweat from his forehead with the back of his gun hand. He felt blood trickle down onto his boot.
You killed him! You killed my brother Tom!
The man called Ben stood outside the saloon door, his raised right arm glistening crimson blood from his knuckles to his elbow. Flintlock ignored Ben and stepped to the body. It had been an aimed shot, but a lucky one. The .45 had crashed into the man's open mouth, splintering teeth, and had passed through his head and exploded out the back of his skull, scattering blood, bone, and brains. It was a fearsome, horrific wound.
No man should die like that.
Ben still stood in front of the saloon, burning hatred in the eyes he pinned on Flintlock. But Flintlock brushed past him and stepped into the saloon. Slayton kneeled beside the groaning McPhee.
Shoulder. Ball's still in there.
He looked up at Flintlock.
Another dead man?
Yeah. I should have remembered that there were three horses in the corral.
Get your friend away from here.
Can you take out the bullet?
No.
How about the blacksmith?
He can't either.
I'll take him to open sky. Find a doctor.
There's a cat house closer. Madame Josette runs the house, and she's good with wounds. God knows she's seen plenty.
Where is this place?
Mile north of Buzzard Gap. Can't miss it.
I'm beholden to you.
Yeah, I just want you two to hell out of here.
Flintlock raised McPhee to his feet.
Can you ride?
No, I can't.
Hurting?
Yes, I am.
Good, that means you ain't dead, and you can still ride.
Flintlock helped McPhee outside. Behind them, they left two thin trails of blood. Then, a shot and a noise like an angry hornet close to Flintlock's ear. Then, his face twisted in fury, stood over his brother. The dead man's smoking Winchester was propped up on his bloody right arm, and he worked the lever awkwardly with his left.
My name's Ben Ross! And I'm gonna kill you for what you've done to my brothers.
McPhee's horse had pulled away from the hitching rail and stood at a distance, its head lowered, tail to the wind-blown sand. Ben Ross fired and dust kicked up between McPhee's feet.
Sam, he'll kill us!
No, he won't. There's already been enough killing.
Tell him that!
Now Ross staggered forward, shortening the distance. His face was stony, determined.
I'll get you to your horse.
Ross walked toward them, firing as he came.
Sam!
As though he hadn't heard, Flintlock continued toward the horse. Flintlock took a second hit. The thick bicep of his arm opened up and seeped blood as a bullet grazed him.
Damn you, Sam!
Then McPhee did the unexpected. The move took Sam Flintlock by surprise. McPhee wrenched away from his supporting arm, did a half turn, and his hand reached out and snaked the Colt from Flintlock's waistband. Flintlock stretched to grab the young man, but his entire weight landed clumsily on his wounded leg and it gave way, tumbling him into the street. The young man walked toward Ross, the Colt at waist level.
Leave us alone! You go back inside now!
Ross frantically tried to work the Winchester lever, panic glinting in his eyes. McPhee was now only 5 paces away, and the hammer of his revolver was thumbed back. The two young men eyed each other. Both looked as though they'd been splashed by buckets of scarlet paint. Both McPhee and Ben fired at the same time. The Winchester's forestock slipped on Ben Ross's blood-slick forearm as he pulled the trigger. A clean miss. McPhee shoved the muzzle of the Colt into the other man's belly. He fired. A gut shot. Ross, knowing he'd just got his death wound, staggered back a step. McPhee fired again and again. He triggered the Colt, but the hammer clicked on the empty chamber.
He's done.
He wrenched the Colt from McPhee's hand. Jamie McPhee stared at Flintlock, his eyes unbelieving.
I killed him, Sam.
Yeah. I know.
What do I do now?
You live with it.
McPhee stared at the dead man.
Look at him, Sam. He was young once, just like me. And now...
That's what death does to a man.
Sam, I swear, as long as I live, I'll never pick up a gun again.
Guns don't go crazy and kill folks. Only people do that. Let's get you to your horse.
Look at us. We're all shot to pieces, Sam.
Yeah, seems like.
When Flintlock and McPhee reached the gentleman's retreat, the morning had given way to afternoon and rain clouds piled above the Samboy Mountains like meringue on a pie. The wind had risen and talked in the trees, and the tattered French tricolor on the building's roof looked as though it had been ironed flat against the graying sky. Cat house doors, unless at times of civil unrest or natural disaster, are never locked. And Sam Flintlock, aware that he and McPhee looked like victims of a train wreck, stepped into the cool, perfumed hall of the main building. A very large woman stood at a doorway and was berating a half-naked girl.
A guest is a gentleman and always a gentleman, no matter the size of his equipment. Do you understand, ma chère?
The girl, her face full of dumb insolence, nodded.
Good. Now don't let it happen again or I'll use, how do you say, your guts for garters.
The girl looked over the big woman's shoulder and her face took on a horrified expression, and the madam followed her stricken stare.
Mon Dieu, qu'est-ce que c'est?
Flintlock and McPhee ticked blood spots onto the polished wood floor.
Wounded man who need your help.
Josette's eyes summed up the two intruders and didn't like what she saw. The Thunderbird on Flintlock's throat gave her a frowning pause for a moment. Flintlock read the madam's face.
We can pay.
She turned to the insolent girl, a shapely little brunette with wide brown eyes who had some fine lines of experience around her mouth.
Ruby, whiskey for the gentleman and tell Charlie Park I want to see him right away.
She indicated a stone bench near the door.
Sit there. I don't want you bleeding all over my furniture.
The woman waited until Flintlock and McPhee were seated, then stepped gingerly toward them and cast an eye over the men's wounds and smiled.
Soyez petits soldats courageux. Be brave, little soldiers.
Josette turned her head as footsteps sounded behind her.
Ah, here is Charlie at last.
The neat little bartender took in the situation at a glance. He examined McPhee's shoulder wound first, then Flintlock's leg.
The bullets must come out.
Charlie nodded to McPhee, who was ashen and in a lot of pain.
Him first.
Can you do that, Charlie?
Yes. I was a doctor once.
How come you ain't one now?
You can't fix everyone. Sometimes you get blamed, even if they were going to die anyway. People wanted to kill me for not being God, so got out of it.
Charlie turned to Ruby.
Bring my bag from my room, girl. Put some clothes on. You'll be my nurse.
The girl frowned and flounced away.
I'll operate right here.
On a stone bench?
Take off your shirt and pants.
I don't know if you noticed, but I'm shot in the leg, Doc. And there are ladies present.
Hell, man, this is a brothel. You got nothing they haven't seen before, bigger and better. I'll give you a shot of morphine to ease the pain.
He nodded to McPhee.
I'll give him one, too.
After Flintlock stripped off his buckskin and pants, Charlie stared at him in amazement.
Dear God in heaven, man, how many times have you been shot and cut?
He examined Flintlock's chest and back.
I count 3 old bullet wounds and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 knife wounds.
Flintlock smiled.
Like medicine, bounty hunting would be a fine profession if folks didn't shoot at you and stick you with a blade.
I think maybe you should try another line of work.
Charlie stripped off McPhee's blood-soaked shirt. The bullet wound in the young man's shoulder looked raw, red, and angry.
It's deep.
He swabbed off McPhee's upper arm, then plunged a syringe of morphine into him.
This won't hurt a bit.
Jamie McPhee was unconscious for most of the digging and cutting, and after he extracted the bullet, Charlie proclaimed the operation a success. Or at least as far as he could tell. Flintlock, fearing the needle more than the knife, passed on the morphine and gritted it out. Luckily, the bullet had missed bone, and Charlie was able to remove the lead without too much difficulty. McPhee wasn't fit to ride, and Flintlock was in no shape to brace the hostility of open sky either. He paid for 2 nights of room and board, in advance, as Josette demanded, and the grateful madam told him he could occupy the George Washington suite, while McPhee was given lesser quarters. The suite turned out to be a narrow, closet-sized room with an iron cot and a collection of mops, pails, and brooms in one corner. Judging by the dust and cobwebs, no one had used it in some time. But Flintlock was pretty much used up. He pulled off his boots and lay back in the protesting cot, closed his eyes, and descended into pain-streaked sleep. Lucian Tweddle stared at Hank Stanek's face, then turned away, waiting for an answer. Bo Hunt sat at ease in a chair and watched both men.
I'm game.
Then it's tonight.
Tweddle looked relieved.
The Circle O won't know what hit them.
But make sure Steve McCord's face is seen.
Well, if O'Rourke can see him that clearly, the kid will probably take a bullet.
Do you care?
Me? Hell no. I don't give a damn.
Remember what I said about Mrs. O'Rourke. Plug her, so old man O'Rourke gets good and mad.
Mad at who?
Why, at Trace McCord, of course.
You plan to start a range war.
Very perceptive of you, Mr. Stanek. Yes, a range war. And when it's over and done, I plan to pick up the pieces.
Make you a big man in these parts.
I'm already a big man in these parts, but I want to be bigger. A whole lot bigger.
Big results require big ambitions.
Precisely, Mr. Hunt.
You can count on me.
Stanek rose to his feet.
I'll go round up Steve McCord and my boys.
Guns blazing tonight, Mr. Stanek. But don't kill too many. O'Rourke will need a few left to fight with.
Stanek nodded, and both he and Bo Hunt left Tweddle's office.
We got a long day ahead of us, McPhee. Can you ride?
No, the poor boy can't ride. He must rest.
What do you say, McPhee?
I don't know, Sam. I honestly don't know.
Get up out of bed and find out.
Irritation niggled at him. To his chagrin, McPhee lay in a brass bed in a room 3 times the size of his own. A girl's room, judging by the female frou-frou lying around.
How's your leg, Sam?
It hurts like hell. I can barely walk, and the pain kept me awake most of the night on a mattress that was stuffed with rocks. I was stuck in a broom closet with a growly rat, but you don't hear me complain.
I'll try to walk.
Damn right you will.
You could kill this boy on the trail today.
Yes, he could. Poor Jamie. What's your all-fired hurry, mister? Are you on the scout?
We have important business in open sky.
shady business, I'll be bound.
I'll get up. I'll feel better.
Good. I'll saddle your horse.
Night had fallen and a bright moon hung like a silver dollar in the sky when Sam Flintlock and Jamie McPhee rode into town. The buildings cast angled cobalt blue shadows, but lamps were lit everywhere and glowed in 100 windows like fireflies. McPhee was in bad shape, barely hanging on to consciousness when Flintlock laid his hand on the young man's forehead. It felt burning hot to the touch.
You got a fever, McPhee. Where's the doctor in town?
Thorn. Down the street. Left. Yellow house.
All right, I'll get you there. Just hold on.
A plump, middle-aged woman with curling pins in her hair opened the door to Flintlock's knock. She carried a single candlestick and a concerned expression.
I have a sick man here. He's burning up with fever.
The woman had a kindly face.
Bring him inside.
Candlelight bobbed along the hallway as Flintlock, supporting McPhee, followed the woman.
Who is it, Mrs. Grange?
A patient, Dr. Thorne.
Good Lord, at this time of night?
He has a fever.
Then bring him into the parlor.
The house smelled of roast beef, fruit pie, cake, bread, and fried chicken, and reminded Flintlock that he hadn't had a decent meal in days. He carried McPhee into the room with the open door, where a short, plump man with a florid face and bright blue eyes awaited him.
I am Dr. Thorne. Lay him on the sofa. I don't have a surgery. Retired, you know.
Flintlock did as he was told, and the doctor unbuttoned McPhee's shirt.
Bullet wound.
It happened yesterday.
Who treated him?
A retired doctor.
He does excellent work. The suturing is excellent. I could have used a chap like him in India.
If this is excellent work, then why does he have a fever?
It's not unusual after a gunshot wound, old fellow. The wound itself is clean, and I detect no odor of gas gangrene. I think with rest he'll be fine, but he'll stay here tonight as a precaution.
Thorne looked directly into Flintlock's eyes.
He's young Jamie McPhee, if I'm not mistaken, and I know I'm not.
Yeah, it's McPhee, all right.
And you must be Sam Flintlock, the desperado Frank Constable hired to guard him.
Right on all counts, Doc.
You don't seem very well yourself, Mr. Flintlock. A bit pale, perhaps.
I got shot in the right thigh.
Pants down. Let me take a look. Mrs. Grange, can we have some sustenance for Mr. Flintlock? I declare that he's as thin as a fiddle string.
Yes, Doctor. He's looking a bit gaunt, the poor dear. Oh, some roast beef sandwiches and a nice cup of tea will set you up a treat, Mr. Flintlock.
Just so, Mrs. Grange. Carry on.
After the woman left, the doctor examined Flintlock's thigh.
First-rate work, I must say. Really tip-top. Where did you meet this surgical paragon, Mr. Flintlock?
He's the bartender at the Gentleman's Retreat Cat House. He was a doctor once, but quit the profession.
A great loss, I'm bound to tell you. In the past, I've treated patrons of that particular den of iniquity. An hour with Venus, a lifetime with Mercury, alas.
How's my leg, Doc?
Coming along quite nicely. I'll clean and rebandage the wound.
Thorne smiled.
Men of your stripe always heal quickly, Mr. Flintlock. The coarse, violent life they lead toughens them like Sheffield steel. Ah, here's Mrs. Grange at last.
The woman laid a platter of sandwiches in front of Flintlock and a pot of steaming tea.
Do you care for anything, Doctor?
No, not even a morsel of beef or a crumb of bread. I rather fancy that I partook of dinner a trifle too enthusiastically.
For his part, Flintlock ate with gusto, and the sandwiches quickly disappeared from his plate, as did the tea in the pot. After they'd finished eating, Thorne lit his pipe and Flintlock built a cigarette.
Doc, did you talk with Frank Constable before he was murdered?
My dear chap, why do you ask?
Because Frank knew the identity of the man who strangled Polly Mallory.
He learned this from the Pinkerton he'd hired?
Clifton Wraith was getting close to the truth. That's why he was killed.
Mr. Constable questioned me about poor Polly's death.
What did he say?
He said that Jamie McPhee was not the killer.
Did he say who was?
No. He told me he'd keep his own counsel for a while longer. The poor fellow was killed the next day. 2 bullets to the back at close range, in my estimation. Mr. Flintlock, the lawyer told me something I already knew.
You know McPhee is innocent?
I examined Polly Mallory's body.
She was pregnant?
Yes, probably 3 months. Polly's trachea was crushed by a man who was able to exert enormous pressure with his hands. He was strong, very strong.
Thorne rose to his feet and stepped beside the unconscious McPhee. He grabbed the young man's right hand and held it up where Flintlock could see it.
Look at that hand. It's never done a hard day's work in its life. It's the hand of a clerk, Flintlock. A pen pusher. Now I study on it, it looks like a woman's hand.
Certainly not strong enough to crush a healthy young girl's throat.
Thorne gently laid McPhee's hand back on his chest.
It takes a certain kind of murderer to strangle a woman. The whole time the victim is dying, he must look into her eyes and not be moved by the terror and pleading he sees in their depths.
Thorne tamped down the tobacco in his pipe with a stubby forefinger.
What kind of man kills like that? Cruel, heartless, ruthless, determined, and on the day of the murder, perhaps desperate. But I would say a man who has killed with his hands before enjoys it.
Who is he, Doc?
I don't know. I only wish I did.